and welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, where we talk about topics related to fundraising, leadership, coaching, and management. I'm Janice Cunning, and I'm here today with Maria Yurikova, President and CEO of Charity Search Group. So welcome, Maria.
Thank you, Janice. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to spend some time talking to you today.
Yes. I mean, we've known each other for quite a few years, so it's always fun to have people that I know join us here and talk about new things. So before we even start talking about the blog post that you wrote for us, let's talk a little bit about what is Charity Search Group.
So Charity Search Group is a recruitment firm that specializes exclusively in helping the nonprofit sector find talented fundraisers and senior leaders. It is a space that I'm very passionate about. Having been a fundraising professional for a very long time, I know all the pain points that every organization experiences in terms of the difficulties of attracting talent and retaining talent. And so it's been a passion of mine to help organizations find a better way to attract talent and the type of talent that will stay and have a positive contribution to their mission. So I work with organizations that are of any size, primarily small shops that are looking to attract talent, sometimes for directors of development roles, sometimes for VPs or executive directors. And I enjoy that kind of work a lot because I get to meet a lot of people, but I also get to impact a variety of different causes. So I've done searches for anything from your typical health-based charities all the way to a charity that was acrobatics and circus school, for example, that was looking for an executive director. So I quite enjoy the fact that I get to see the passion behind any number of causes now and the type of people that attracts.
That's fun. Yeah. And I must say, like many of my coaching clients, you know, people often come to coaching because they're in transition or looking for a change. And many of them work with recruiters. I think it's so helpful, like just for getting a broader perspective. I mean, that's one of the powerful things about being in your role is like you see such a broad scope of what's going on in the sector. So, yeah. So you wrote for us about these like really five key ideas and specifically about like your first big senior leadership role. So why don't we'll start out by sort of explaining like why is a senior leadership role? How do we define that? And why is it different than just like your first manager role, for example?
Right. Well, I differentiate between managers and leaders when it comes to, you know, if we wanted to think about it a little bit more in a hierarchical way, for example, leaders are people who manage managers in that kind of a structure. But I think the difference is that when you're in your first management role, your scope of control is still fairly small. You will probably are managing a few people, you're reporting to one person that reports into somebody else or the board and whatnot. So you're once removed from having this huge amount of people that are expected or looking at you for direction, for strategy, for inspiration, for vision, and all that. So I think that you're still a little bit in a bubble when you're in a management role, but when you're looking at your first senior leadership role, that's when you really are setting on the stage and you're coming out of that bubble and you're setting to the point where you're influencing people you don't even know you're influencing within an organization, I think.
Yeah, I love, that's very clear. I like never actually thought about it exactly in that way, but that's so true. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I love, you share a very funny video, so people should definitely click on the blog and watch the Mr. Bean video. But I like the metaphor. Like we often talk, like you say, about climbing a ladder or taking a step up, but you talk about it as a plunge. So why is that metaphor make sense to you?
Right. Well, I think the inspiration I got, and I tend to do that a lot, is like before I write a lot of the blogs and webinar content that I produce all the time, I tend to like try to find a moment of presence and inspiration. So I think I was sitting outside in a park on a bench having my weekly Starbucks drink and sort of thinking about, okay, well, you know, what is it like to be in a leadership position? And I think I'd watched the Mr. Bean video shortly before that, so it was still fresh in my mind. But I always thought about the fact that even within my own career, I think we've all been very sort of gung-ho and excited and motivated to be promoted and always thinking about climbing that ladder up. But the reality is that when you get into a leadership position, it's actually like you have to completely let go of the fact that you think you have as much control as you think you do. And so therefore, you know, a lot of sports in general, in order to execute a movement very well, you have to let go mentally of the consequences and where you are and whatnot. So that's sort of where that came up. And then Mr. Bean is, I think he just brings a level of comical sort of portrayal of everyday situations, which I really enjoy. But he also has that kind of a childish approach to things, which I think we all sometimes need to find a way to find the humor in the stressful situations that we find ourselves in. And that was the part where he was part overconfident, I think, but also got totally intimidated by two little kids. And had a very ungraceful flop from a diving board.
Yes. Yeah. I actually, it's funny, like, I think many of us can feel that feeling, like when you're a kid and you climb up the high diving board for the first time, it's like, oh my goodness,
exactly.
Here I am. Do exactly. I climb back down the ladder or do I actually jump in? Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. And I love, like, you kind of go through these really five concrete tips. So let's just kind of go through them. So the first one is know thyself. So tell us a little bit about that and what do you recommend people do to achieve that?
Right. And I noticed that a lot when I interview candidates for senior roles, for example. So I think it's a Chinese proverb that says, and let me see if I can get this right, but knowing others is intelligence and knowing yourself is wisdom. And I think that the level of self-awareness is necessary in order to be a good leader. And it's not just about getting that role, but also succeeding in it. And it's very different when you're listening to a candidate talk about their accomplishments and achievements, where it's sort of check boxes that they go through. You know, I have managed the budget of X and I have had that many direct reports or accomplished this kind of fundraising goal, et cetera. And these are all good and necessary to have, but it's really important to have a deeper level of self-awareness as to what your values are. I think that's a really important one, and sort of how you operate, how do you navigate conflict, what inspires you, how do you rally others? And I think the how and the why sometimes gets lost on people. And I think that's the part where self-awareness and knowing yourself is really, really important. And I think that you can't really do that through self-reflection on your own. I think you need someone else to be able to do that. And when I say someone else, you need someone else who's going to come from a place of non-judgment, but also unbiased, because we can all find people in our lives that are going to sort of be our cheerleaders and be like, oh my God, you're awesome. You know, early on when I was a manager in my career, I used to have all these people for whom that was their first job and I was their first manager. And they'll be like, Maria, you're the best manager ever. And I would be like, oh yeah, and how many managers have you had? And like, well, you're my first one. So that kind of cheerleading is good, but I think you need someone else is going to sort of hold you accountable a little bit more to those good stories and dig a little deeper and maybe do the, I call this hard work, because it's heavy lifting and it's sometimes uncomfortable. Sometimes it could also be like a little bit weird, and it needs to be done in order for you to know what kind of leader you're going to be and you want to be.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people get inspired to be in senior leadership roles because they're frustrated with their current senior leadership roles. And they think that if they're in those shoes, they're going to be completely different. And then they find themselves in those positions and they do the exact same thing. And that, I think, is where that self-awareness and discovering your own strengths and how to lean on them, but also knowing what your pitfalls are and the rabbit holes you go down is going to be really, really important.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you know, I mean, we align so much on this, right? I mean, this is so much of what we do at Fundraising Leadership, is helping people identify their values, articulate their strengths, but also understand, like, what are your unique negative voices in your head that are holding you back and how do you overcome those? So I think that I love that you started with that, because I think you're right. Like, there's, when you're going for your first manager role, you might be more focused on like what skills you're bringing to the table.
Right.
And when you're going for your first senior leadership role, it really is about who you are and why you do what you do. Yeah. So the next one is about becoming more comfortable with ambiguity and lack of control. And I will say this has been a big journey for me. Like, I'm a person who loves things to be clear. I was once given feedback that was very helpful, that it was like, you're always looking for the right answer. And there's not a right answer.
Yeah.
And I think about that often. So yeah. So how do we build that muscle of like becoming more comfortable with ambiguity?
Well, I think the first step of this is you have to accept the fact that there is such a thing as ambiguity. And as I say, this pandemic, I think, has been eye-opening for a lot of that kind of stuff. I remember early on, I think it was in March, I was talking to an executive director of a small charity that they were supposed to have a gala in April. And I was on the phone with the board of directors and the ED trying to sort of brainstorm with them ways to pivot away from the fundraising gala. And the executive director, and I said something along the lines of, you know, it's too bad it got canceled, but maybe there will be opportunities. I'm like, no, it didn't get canceled. It's just getting postponed until September. So that was someone for whom that lack of ambiguity was just not tolerated at all. Like for her, it was like, okay, plan A was April. Now plan B is September. And we're just going to work with that. And clearly, you know, it is September just passed and that wasn't going to be feasible either. But I think that you have to allow yourself to give yourself permission in a way to not know the answer every time, to say and admit that you don't know the answer every time, and to realize that there will be situations where there's going to be a lot of question marks and a lot of things you're not going to know. And you just have to make the best decision given the circumstances, and realizing that sometimes that will be wrong. Yeah. And knowing how to, you know, those goes back to resilience and sort of knowing how to pick yourself back up after a failure, or when you have to admit you've made a mistake or something has been wrong.
Yeah. And then actually in a lot of ways, like your third point about building that support network, like especially sort of outside your organization, I think that's also a way to broaden your perspective and like have people that you can go to when you don't know, like it's a little bit more safe sometimes outside of our own organization to be like, I don't know what to do. So yeah. Like, so how, like with clients that you've worked with who are looking for new roles, or yourself even, like what have you seen people do to kind of increase their network?
That's a good point. I think I find it that, people in their career go through two phases. So early on in their career, they're very focused on building their network and then sort of, you know, actively go to professional development opportunities, networking opportunities, et cetera. And then they kind of go through this like lull period later on in their career where they're not getting as much, or maybe the professional development opportunities out there are not geared towards people who are in the sort of the mid to late stage of their career. So they don't feel the urge to learn as much, if you wish. And then they sort of get into the later point of their career. And now sometimes they're inspired to mentor others, for example, but they almost feel like they're not gotten to the point where there's no one to mentor them. And because they are now at the later stage of their career. And I don't know that our mentors always need to necessarily be someone who's more experienced, right? Sometimes you just need someone who has a different perspective on it. And when you're in that later stage in your career, it's so important that you find ways to connect with others who are going through the same experience, knowing that that may not be easy sometimes, but it certainly will not come naturally to you the way networking does earlier in that career, right?
Yeah.
Even if you're in your first senior leadership role, let's say that you were, you know, the vice president of advancement, for example, somewhere, even if you were to go to conferences, for example, the people you're going to connect with, the majority of them are probably going to be more junior looking to network with you, which is a good thing. You should mentor these people. But you need to actively work towards creating a village around you or a support circle that's accessible, that's relatable and goes through those kinds of experiences. And it also helps you with that being a sounding board, but also can keep confidentiality in place, because sometimes the decisions you have to make are a little bit tricky. That's why it's important to have them to be outside of the organization rather than inside the organization. I think I've seen some people do this successfully with, so depending on where you are, I know some nonprofit chapters, for example, would have like roundtables for new executive directors, for example, or subsectors within the industry would have sort of, you know, summits or little networking opportunities or benchmarking opportunities for organizations that are of similar sizes or experiencing similar challenges, for example. So that's one way to do it. I think another way to do it is to look at your local community and think about other people who are walking the same path as you. And the one good thing about the nonprofit sector is that we think of ourselves as collaborators and colleagues before we think of ourselves as competition. And I think we need to flex that muscle a little more when it comes to networking. So if you're the, you know, if you're fundraising for the local hospital, and of course, on some level, the local university is probably going to be talking to the same donors as you, but it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, leaders in both organizations can lean on each other.
Yeah.
So sometimes you'll actually come up with good ideas as well.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point. I mean, that's what I find. Like, people are very open and willing. And actually, I think sometimes we get in our own way because we feel like I'm going to be bothering somebody if I ask them for, you know, to have coffee or Zoom coffee at the probably at the moment. But to be honest, like, if you think about yourself, like, whenever anybody asks you for advice, you're so flattered. Like, you know. So I think sometimes, and you know, and some people are very busy and they might say no, but I think we need to kind of stop getting in our own way and just ask, you know, and be very clear, like, about what our expectations are of that. And to also trust that we're going to bring as much to that person as they are to us, no matter what, like you said. And I think nowadays too, like, it's great to have sometimes people of different age brackets, right? Because it's there's sort of different skills and awarenesses and perspectives that people bring. So yeah, that's cool.
And I think it doesn't even need to be in the, you don't even have to stick to the nonprofit sector. Like, what I think would be very cool is if you could really broaden that and go a little bit out of left field, particularly if you're in a position where you're looking for someone to give you just a different way of thinking about things or a different way of looking at things, and the less exposure they've had, maybe the better. So it doesn't mean that, like, it doesn't have to necessarily be very linear and connected. It could be something that I've left to. I think some of the best ideas I've ever had have come from people who had nothing to do with the work I was doing.
Yeah, that's true. And it's like, think about your university that you went to, right? Like, alumni events, you can think about volunteering in the community, you know, a lot of times, I mean, there's a lot of women in fundraising. There's often a lot of women's professional organizations, for example. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's good. And number four is become an open book, which is about integrity and transparency. But you also mentioned feedback, which is a big part of what we do at Fundraising Leadership.
Right.
It's like encouraging leaders to seek feedback. They often want to learn to give feedback, but sometimes they forget that we need to start by looking for feedback. So
right.
I think, again, like, I think that's a role that you as a recruiter really play, is like to actually give like very honest feedback. So how do you find people take feedback, and what do you think they can do to like build that muscle of being able to accept it?
It's hard. I would say, okay, so within the context of recruitment, I think one of the reasons why candidates like working with recruiters like me is probably because they do get the opportunity to get feedback. I think oftentimes the hiring process, for various reasons of liability and legality we're not going to get into today, tend to sort of shut the door very quickly. And it's like a very much a yes or no. You either get the job and you still don't get feedback, or you don't get the job and you still don't get feedback. And then the natural defense mechanism in all of us is to come up with something that we think is the reason why we didn't get the job. Like, oh, well, they just went with someone they knew, or, you know, oh, it must be because I did X, Y, Z, right? But the reality is that so it's hard to give feedback in that kind of situation, because as much as we want to be very scientific, the hiring decision sometimes is a bit of a gut reaction that you can't always explain. And it does sometimes come to fit and personality, which is not things that you can change anyways. But I think the type of feedback that I like to give is sort of, you know, present yourself in like in a way that's true to yourself. I think that's really important. And just because you had a negative outcome from one particular role, it doesn't necessarily mean that you did anything wrong. Like, you could do all the things right and still not get the job because, you know, eventually only one person gets it. And sometimes when these kinds of doors close, something else opens that might actually be a good experience, which was, for example, in my case, as to how I ended up becoming a recruiter myself, was because I had gone through a process with a recruiter and I enjoyed the process, even though I didn't actually get the job.
Yeah.
So sometimes that's important to have. But in the context of senior leaders, I remember handing in my notice at a job and having the sort of that last goodbye with the most senior leader in the organization, who, you know, I know we're on video, but I'm going to try to demonstrate anyways, sort of cross her arms like this, if you can see me. And I was like, so like, I'm always looking for some feedback. And I know that people don't give me feedback very often, but like, you're a fairly straightforward person. So like, what's your feedback? So the reason why I do this is because you could tell that this was someone who had been told that they need to ask for feedback and probably genuinely wanted it, but everything about their demeanor was so intimidating that, I mean, only people who are on their like last day would probably venture to give feedback in that context. And I know, having managed hundreds of people, I know when a staff person points out something to you that is a room for improvement, it stings. It's like a punch in the gut. So I get it. It's very difficult. But it's so necessary, because those are the growth moments that will make you a better leader. Like, the people who flatter you are not going to improve you. I'm not saying that you should only take criticism seriously. But it's really important that you create a safe environment where people can give you feedback.
Yeah.
And that's why having that network of people around you sometimes is helpful as well. But most of the time, you're not going to be able to easily find that in your own organization. Because it just generally, we live in an environment where, for whatever reason, people, even in a industry that has such tremendous talent shortage and high turnover, people are still afraid to get fired and therefore don't want to speak up and do all those other things, right?
Yeah.
So, like, get feedback.
Yeah. And I think the other piece too, and I, for anyone listening who hasn't read Radical Candor by Kim Scott, it's an excellent book, and it talks a lot about giving and getting feedback. But I'll just circle back to your first point about know thyself, because the thing is, like, feedback is as much about the person giving it as about you, right? Like, some people just like different styles. And so I think when you really know yourself, like, you know your strengths and your values, it does become easier to take feedback, because sometimes you'll get feedback and you'll say, yeah, that's fair, but that's, I'm not willing to change that. Like, you don't always have to do something with it, right? Like, you know, my partner David often says to me, like, we're not for everybody. I mean, we're just not, right? Like, in some ways, unless you're vanilla and kind of boring, then you're not for everyone. And right. So I think it's, yeah, it's like being willing to, like, really accept it, think about it, but then also kind of test it against your own strengths and values that you know you bring to the table, you know, because I think especially for women, like, sometimes, like, feedback comes from this gender bias lens, you know, and we need to reject it, and that's okay.
Yeah. And I think as women, we sometimes put tremendous pressure on ourselves to appear a certain way or not let our feelings into play, for example, is one thing. But on the topic of becoming an open book, I think the other point I really want to make is, I think as senior leaders, you do live in a fishbowl, and I'm quite firm on that. And you probably don't even realize how much impact you have with the tiniest things you do, on, like, the staff that you interact with the least. On the opposite end, like, it's someone that you have very cursory interactions with, maybe tremendously inspired by something that you say in a meeting with 50 or 60 other people that was probably not even, it was sort of off the cuff. And appearing vulnerable, for example, and sort of talking about moments of doubt, for example, or things that have not worked out well in your career, sometimes very helpful. I think particularly women tend to put a little bit more pressure on themselves to appear very strong and sort of stoic and sort of, I've had it all together all the time, that others that don't feel that way sometimes can be very intimidated and feel like they can never rise up to that expectation. So it's important to sort of be a little bit more of an open book, because that also will make you much more appealing as a leader, and people are going to naturally gravitate towards that kind of leadership style, particularly millennials and younger generations. They look for vulnerability and realness and authenticity over anything else.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that really is your last point, right? Which is bring your full self to work and, like, accept others bringing them full self to work. And I think in some ways, like, that's one of the things that I'm most excited about, is I think that idea is really actually catching fire, you know, like Brené Brown's work, for example, around vulnerability. Like, I think people are starting to realize, like, we are not robots. We are human beings. We have feelings, you know, and like you said, it's inspiring. It's actually inspiring to see a leader who brings their, you know, their passion, their enthusiasm, their quirks, like their, you know, their kind of personal interests and lets you see all of the sides of them.
Yeah, I think I still vividly remember the first time I observed a senior leader being like that, being vulnerable and sort of talking about their deepest fears and their feelings. And in this particular case, she was talking about balance and how difficult it is to balance, I think, work and life. And she had given an example about how, she constantly feels guilt that she's not a good enough mother because she doesn't feel like she's paying enough attention to her child. And I think it was about crayons and glitter or something like this. It was a particular situation. And, you know, this is something that happened to me probably almost a decade ago. And it's not someone that I have interacted with more than two or three times in my life. But this is how vivid of a memory I have of that person being vulnerable and how much that impacted me, you know, person one out of 100 in a crowd. So those are really important moments. But you're right. I think that we do have there's several silver linings about this pandemic, but one of them is the fact that people now have kind of gotten a glimpse onto each other's lives beyond the office and realize that there's so many other things going on and it's okay not to be okay. And I think that's really, really important. I think in a way it's quite interesting that we had to move away from a typical office environment in order to allow ourselves permission to be more like it at work.
Yes. Well, and you mentioned earlier too, like, generationally, like we don't want to sort of stereotype, but I do think it's a shift in society, right?
Yes.
We sort of see, millennials and beyond like wanting that. And I love that. Like, I feel like the more sort of we can accept like people being different at work and bringing them full selves to work, like I said, you know, it makes it more fun too. It's just more fun when you actually feel like you know people that you work with as human beings, you know.
Yeah, for sure. and you create that cohesive environment that makes people want to come to work when there is a level of understanding that we're human beings and we can't just constantly be on 24/7.
Yeah.
And
we
that's
trust
why,
each other. You know, we trust each other more when we know each other.
Yeah. I think as a recruiter, that's been one of the things that I would say before March, I would had to advocate with employers for flexibility and working from home allowances, for example, a lot more. And then all of a sudden, you know, March happened and now everyone is on board and they're like, oh my God, yes, work can actually get done. So I'm glad that's another silver lining that I think we're seeing. But I think the mental health aspect at work has been very important, and it's not something that we can just pay lip service to. And it's really important when you're in those leadership roles that you lead the way in that kind of, you know, give people permission to express themselves in that way. That's really, really important because I've managed many, many people who've had mental health issues, for example. And as a manager, it's a very tough spot to be in because sometimes like work just needs to get done. And but what I've also noticed is that, you know, when someone is not okay, for you to just push them and add more stress onto it doesn't help anybody. So giving them permission to express that they're not okay instead of them trying to bottle it up and then you just see it in a whole bunch of other areas of their lives that it's happening, it's not healthy for anyone, including your organization, right?
Yes. So I'm going to encourage everybody to read the blog post if they haven't already, because there's just lots in it. And, you know, it feels like one of those you can keep going back to and like picking something out to work on. So, you know, we'd love to give people something to try. So what's something tangible that you want people to do in the short term?
Yeah, I think that this is a good time to expand your network and find two or three people that you can connect with that can be your support network outside of your, you know, whichever your organization you're in. And, you know, I encourage you, if you're looking into your senior leadership role or if you're already in it, you know, and now it's a good time. You don't necessarily have to commute very far. Zoom calls are actually a little bit easier to execute than, you know, coffee chats in the middle of downtown, wherever you are. So I would encourage you to find two or three people that you can add to your network and connect with them. I think you're going to benefit from it just as much as they will, and it will be a positive thing. But we need more like that. No one can do this alone.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course, if they are looking for a job or they are looking to hire a great new leader, then you could be part of that network. So how, what's the best way for people to reach out to you?
Sure. I am usually, I'm very active on LinkedIn. So I like to connect with people on LinkedIn. So that's probably the easiest way. But my, I think my email will be in the blog, but otherwise it's Maria with a Y in the middle of all the letters at charitysearchgroup.com. So that's probably the easiest way to get in touch with me. I love sort of brainstorming career advice with people if that's what they need, or sort of giving them ideas as to what the current market looks like if they're thinking about adding a member to their team and are not quite sure how to go about it. I'm happy to connect with anyone. I'm particularly passionate in helping organizations find better talent, because I think this pandemic has also shown a light on so many organizations that are critical to our communities that sometimes don't necessarily get the donor support they would like to, or they have a hard time attracting the fundraising talent or the senior leadership talent they would like to. And that's, I like to think of myself as someone who's going to evening out the playing field a little bit in that way, by proactively helping organizations find better talent. So always interested in connecting with people for sure.
Yeah, great, great. Well, thank you. It's been delightful to talk to you as always. I've enjoyed seeing you kind of make this transition yourself, you know, knowing you as a fundraiser and a leader, and, you know, now seeing you in this new role. And, you know, hopefully we'll have you on again. You know, we're sort of, we have a lot of joint interest, your company and our company. So we're looking forward to kind of talking to you throughout the next few years. Yeah, so I'm going to invite everyone to please subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. We're on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music Podcasts, and Spotify. And if you're liking the show, rate and review to help people find us. And now we're going to invite you to go out, expand that network, get two or three people, Maria might be one of them, and go put it into practice.